This is University Forum. I'm Jean Moore, bringing you a presentation on The Economy, made by Fred Sherman, Senior Vice President, Chief Economist, and Managing Director of Sovereign Bank, at an October luncheon meeting of the Rotary Club of Upper Darby Lansdowne at Drexelbrook Inn in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. Mr. Sherman is well known for his radio, television, and print commentary on the economy. We join him as he is talking about directions and says,
talking about directions, the reason I talk about directions is a couple of years ago I was in Ireland with my fiance, and we were with Talk Tours, and we had a free day in Dublin, so I decided to see what part of Northern Ireland was all about. Unfortunately, I could not get into Belfast, Northern Ireland, because we did not have insurance, the tour group. But I rented a car and we started a drive in Northern Ireland. And I just want to tell you that I flew during World War II and I was a navigator, and I really know my way around and about where to go in all kinds of directions. But in about 1 hour, I was absolutely, completely, totally lost. I found myself in this town, must have had 100 people and at least 10 pubs. I love the Irish. I went into the one pub and there was a long bar, and the bartender was sitting, was talking to a fellow at one end of the bar, and at the other end of the bar was another fellow having a course of Guinnesses. And I walked up to the other fellow and I said, I want to ask the bartender a question. Could you tell me his name? He said, Mr. Murphy. Everybody is Mr. Murphy, naturally. And I waited until the bartender was finished talking to the person he was talking to, and I went down, I ordered a pint of Guinnesses, and very simply and very plainly, I said to the bartender, how do you get to Dublin from here? And he looks me back straight in the eye and he says to me, me brother-in-law takes me in his car. So I said, okay. I guess I didn't come through on that one, so I know there are another Guinnesses, and I said, I'm going to get him on this one. I thought I'd paraphrase a little bit differently. And I said to him, what is the quickest way then to get to Dublin from here? And he says to me, are you walking or are you driving? I said, I'm driving. He said, that's the quickest way. So if you ever go to Ireland, be ready for a lot of Irish humor, which I do love. I think the market has lost direction a little bit. October has been a down month for the market. October historically is pretty much of a good month. No question about it. But we have so much going on. And I guess you know about, if you listen to me on KYW, and besides KYW, I do talk radio on Sunday morning, WPEN, and then I do TV on Sunday morning also on Channel 10 television, so I have a lot of exposure. But if you know, and you listen on KYW, you know especially that I have not been a fan of Alan Greenspan for a long time. Alan Greenspan has been around since 1987. He replaced Paul Volcker, and his term is up on January the 31st. The FOMC will meet again in November, they'll meet again in December, and they're going to meet again in January. And as you sit there, Fed fund rates are at 3.75% at the moment. And when Alan Lee's office, they've told us, in no uncertain terms, that they're going to raise rates again. They'll probably raise a quarter in November, a quarter in December, and a quarter in January. So at this time next year, in January of next year, when Alan Lee's, Fed fund rates will probably be about 4.5%. Will it slow up the housing markets? I don't think so. Mortgage applications came through today. Mortgage applications were down dramatically. The housing market is 85% existing home sales and 15% new home sales. Existing home sales are running at record levels. New home sales are running at record levels. There is no stopping new home sales. But we are beginning to see a buildup of inventory in existing home sales, and we could see a little bit of a slowdown. But what's going to happen now with people knowing that interest rates are moving higher and mortgage rates are just about 6.03% last week, people are going to rush in to buy, I hope, because it's the best deal around, a fixed 30-year rate if they can do that, because I think that's the best way to address a mortgage today is fixed rates, because interest rates will move higher. There is absolutely no question about it. The Fed has said it. They've been out in strength. Treasury Secretary Snow has told us. Alan has told us he's concerned about inflation, even though at the moment we really don't have too much inflation. Last week, we got the consumer price index, and the consumer price index, if you extract food and energy, of course, you die. You freeze and you die. But if you take out food and energy, the core rate was running up 0.1%, And then we got producer price index a week later, and the core rate of producer price index was 0.3%. And none of those two numbers I gave you are inflationary. If you take out the spike in energy prices, we really don't have very much inflation, no question about it. But Alan Greenspan is worried about inflation, and that is the biggest fear. I'll tell you a cute story about inflation. Everybody has a different feeling about inflation. The cute story I have is many years ago, I lived in Reading, Pennsylvania for many years, and I finally took a job. I was in the furniture business for a long time. And about 81, I got into the finance business. And in about 83, I took a job in Philadelphia. And to get to Philadelphia from Reading, Pennsylvania, you either took a bus at 5:30 in the morning out of Morgantown. I guess you know what Morgantown is on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. The railroad died. The Reading Railroad died in 1942. It's now Outlet, so you can't take the train. Or you drove. So I drove. And I was working for Prudential. I went to work for Prudential Securities at the time at 17th and Market Street. And this was in 83 or 84, and the market had just begun to take off. And I used to park on the other side of the Vine Street Expressway because it was much cheaper to park there. Remember, I just started in the security business. It's been a great run. I've had a wonderful, wonderful career in the security business. But on the corner of 17th and Market Street, just before I got to my office, there was this pretzel stand. And the pretzel stand was run by this little old lady who had to be at least 60 years old, little old lady. And she sold pretzels. And the pretzels she sold were 50 cents a pretzel, and they were stale and they were hard. But I felt sorry for her. So every morning I would say hello. She had KYW News Radio on. I left my card. She knew who I was, but I never, ever took a pretzel. For 2 years, 50 yards down or 30 yards down, there was a guy from Vietnam selling fresh pretzels for 35 cents. But I felt far sorry for this little old lady, so I never took a pretzel. I left my 50 cents. It was November. It was starting to snow. I was cold. I was rushing. I was in a hurry. I left my 50 cents. I started to almost run away, and I heard her call my name, Mr. Sherman, and I stopped, and the sun sort of came out, and I felt like 100 degrees warmer than I ever felt, and I said, oh, my God, I'm so happy. She's going to ask me a question. She's going to acknowledge who I am. So I turned around, and I said, how are you? It's so great that you're finally talking to me. It's so great that I can possibly help you. Do you want to invest? Do you want to open a RIRA? Do you want to open a Roth? Do you want to open a 529 plan? But what do you want to do? And she said, oh, it's nothing like that. And I said to her, well, what is it? She said, I just wanted to tell you that the price of pretzels are now 75 cents. Now, that's nasty. That is really very nasty. But that's really what life is all about. I don't see any real problem with inflation, seriously. But I see a real problem with the fact that we do have power. I don't see oil. Oil today was $62.65 or something like that. I don't know whether you know it or not, but it costs about $4 to get a barrel of oil out of the ground in the OPEC regions. The 11 members of OPEC, I call them princes of plunder. They are, because they're making unbelievable profits. Today, ConocoPhillips reported their earnings. Their earnings were triple what they were a year ago. Tonight, Exxon reports their earnings. Their earnings are going to be like $4 or $5 billion for the quarter. They're making an unbelievable amount of money. And we have people in Congress who are now talking about, hey, you guys, you're really making an awful lot of money. But the problem is not only the barrel of oil. The problem is that we have not built a new refinery in the last 30 years. In fact, we have closed 149 refineries in the last 30 years. And gasoline consumption today is 45% more than it was 30 years ago. So we have a problem with refinery. I feel very sorry for a medium-priced family because fuel oil for the house, natural gas, is going to be up 50 to 60% this winter. And some of the fuel bills are going to go from like $300 for the year to like $9 to $1,000. And that's a lot of money to a lot of people. We are doing nothing about the spike in fuel. We are doing nothing about the high cost of fuel, and we should be. We try to be too politically correct at times, but we're going to end up drilling in Alaska. There's no question about it. I've been to Alaska, the place that they want to drill. Even the caribous don't want to live where we want to drill, and it's only 2% of all Alaska. But we're going to have to find other means of fuel, hybrids, fuel cells, battery-driven, hydrogen, and we're going to have to find other means of supporting our desire to drive as much as we do drive. There's no question about it. So that's one of the things that we have to do, because we cannot be dependent upon OPEC to supply us with fuel. But don't worry about fuel. Don't worry about supply, because I'll give you some numbers. If we never discovered another single well, if we never got another drop of new oil in a new well, Saudi Arabia has enough oil for the next 100 years reserve. Kuwait has enough reserves for the next 125 years. We don't know how much Russia has because we can't really find out. But before we had a war in Iraq, Iraq was shipping 5 to 6 million barrels of oil a day, and we feel that Iraq could have the second largest supply of oil in the world, and maybe one of these days we will find out. But for the moment, because of blowing up of wells and drills and stuff, Iraq is only shipping about 1 to 2 million a day. If we could get Iraq to ship 5 to 6 million a day, they could get out of financial trouble real quick, but it's not going to happen right away. So I feel that the spike in energy is transitory, which means it's not permanent. But once they raise interest rates, then interest rates will be permanent. So if you're thinking of taking out a loan or buying a house, this is a good time to do it because interest rates are moving higher. The Treasury yield today was at the highest it's been in 2 years. The 10-year note was up to 4.53%. And I feel at the end of this year, the 10-year, which really dictates what's going on in the country, the 10-year yield will be somewhere about 4.75%, which is not a lot. There's no question about it. But if any of you had about $5 or $10 million and you asked me what to do with it, I would say go out and buy some tax-free funds, some Pennsylvania A-rated, don't have to be insured, tax-free funds, because that's a great way to go. You don't have to worry about taxes. The market contains a risk. I don't know if we'll ever, I hope not. But if we ever had another situation like we had in 9/11, the market will tank. There's no question about it. And if you have a stock that's $50 a share, that stock would tank, and that stock could end up the day at $25. So if you have great positions in any stock, I suggest that you put stop losses in to protect yourself against a situation that could happen again. And if you don't know what a stop loss is, it's about time you learn what a stop loss is. But if you want to learn all about stop losses, go to my webpage. My webpage is fredsherman.com. And it will tell you all about stop losses and covered calls and bull spreads and things that you ought to know in today's market. What do you have to know about today's market? You have to know the three rules of investing. There's only three rules of investing. The first rule of investing is don't lose the money, Roger. The second rule is don't you dare lose the money. And the third rule is just remember rules one and two. And if you remember that, you have this market really, really great. But seriously, very seriously, you have to be well diversified today. And the best way to be diversified is mutual funds, because mutual funds gives you professional management, diversification, low transaction costs, gives you everything you need. And some of the best mutual funds are out of the city in Vanguard. There's Fidelity, there's Schwab. There are a tremendous amount of mutual funds available. In fact, there are 14,000 mutual funds available today. I remember about 10, 15, or 20 years ago, there was about 3 hedge funds. Today, I think there are 8,000 hedge funds. And you know about hedge funds because if you know about Refco, if some of you read about Refco, Refco went from coming out public, and in 8 months, they went bankrupt, by the way. In 8 months, the stock went from $22 to $30 and is now selling for less than a buck. That's a hedge fund. They misplaced $430 million.
You are listening to a presentation on The Economy, made by Fred Sherman at the October luncheon meeting of the Rotary Club of Upper Darby, Lansdowne.
Talking about hedge funds, Google. Google will get to $100 billion market value in less than 2 years. At 14 months, they hit it on an intraday value on Monday when the stock got to $436 for just a moment. Google will get to $100 billion market value, which is the price of the stock times the share price. And Hewlett-Packard has been around 60 years. Google today is worth more than Hewlett-Packard, is worth more than Coca-Cola, is worth more than Wells Fargo. It took Cisco 8 years to get to a market value of $100 billion, and it's going to take Google, a search engine, maybe 15 or 16 months to get to that particular value. When it came out 14 months ago at $85 a share, I thought it was overpriced. By the way, I'm an economist. Greenspan is an economist. And to be very honest with you, God created economists simply to make weathermen look good. Because other than that, we have no real function. We make a lot of forecasts. We make a lot of predictions. And that's what Allen does, and that's what the FOMC does. But we're in pretty good shape as an economy. We're going to create over 2 million jobs this year, no question about it. We're going to have an unemployment rate near about 5%, and thinking about Killer Katrina and Rita and Wilma, that's not bad. We're doing very well in jobless claims. The lines are getting less for jobless claims. We get a report on gross domestic product this week, Thursday, I think, tomorrow, and gross domestic product will be running at about 3.6%. That's pretty neat. The yearly report of gross domestic product was about 4.1%, but economists figuring the impact of Katrina and Rita would take down about 5 percentage points. So we're now predicting for the year the economy will run at about 3.6%. And for 2006, we're predicting that the economy will run about 4.1%. But everything is much better in this country today than you read in papers, trash tabloids like the New York Times, like the Washington Post, like the Los Angeles Times. I don't know what they're looking at, but today's headline was a dramatic headline because, in all seriously, we have lost 2,000 men in Iraq, and that was the headline today in USA Today, in the New York Times, in the Philadelphia Inquirer, in the Washington Post, and I do read all of those newspapers, and you don't get the real story on what's happening anyplace in the world because of the fact that, you know what really bothers me, and I could tell you, when I speak to people about the Constitution, instead of speaking about Adams and Hamilton and things like that, they tell me about slavery. And when I speak to people about World War II, instead of talking about the great things that happened in World War II, the people who don't like us talk about the Japanese and internment camps and nuclear bomb. And when I speak about what's happening in the Gulf today, they talk about the torture and the prisoners and everything else. I can't get a pleasant remark about someone who doesn't like what's going on in this country. And I just pull out my credit card and say, gee, I'll buy you a ticket to someplace else. Because democracies do not make war against other democracies. There's no question about that. And whatever we have to do to protect our liberties, what we are doing today, we're fighting for our liberties, our freedom, our justice in America, because we don't want the terrorists to come here. They've been here. We know what they can do. And what happened on George Bush's watch did not start. 9/11 did not start on September 11th. It started years and years before that. It started with the bombing of the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. It started with the coal. It started with the Marines in Beirut. It really started back in 1972 with the Israeli athletes when they killed 11 Israeli athletes in 1972. So it's been going on for a long time. And for a long time, we never did anything about it. And then when suddenly we start to do something about it, there's a lot of people who feel we're not doing it the right way, which is not good. Somewhere during the course when I give a talk, somebody will say, okay, Fred, you keep telling us what to do with our money, but what do you do with your money? Obviously, you make a lot of money. Obviously, you should have a lot of money. And I say, I don't worry about my money. I simply don't. And somebody comes back and says, that's a stupid kind of answer. What do you mean you don't worry about your money? I say it's very simple. I don't worry about my money because all of my money is with my ex-wife in Boca Raton, so there's no reason for me to worry about my money at all. But you might have to worry about your money, no question about it. If I had your money today, the group that I would look at, and I would look at the group, I would look at the healthcare group. I would look at the Mercks and the Pfizer and the WellPoints and things like that, because we're all getting older, and I think that that group is going to continue to gain. And the second group I would look at would be the energy group, because we're going to have to use a lot more energy. And what I like about energy is that most of these companies pay a nice dividend, a nice yield, and you should know by now that you pay 15% taxes on dividends, so there's no question about that. And after I looked at the energy group, I would probably buy a fund. I want to look at the area that I'm in, which is financial area. You're going to see a lot of mergers and acquisitions. Just the other day, an outfit called Santander, which is the biggest bank in Spain and the ninth biggest bank in the world, they have over 10,000 branches, proceeded to take a 19.9% interest in Sovereign Bank with an option to take it up to about 24%. And at the same time, Sovereign Bank bought Independence Community Bank out of New York. It's about, first of all, Santander Bank is an $80 billion bank market value. I'm not talking about assets under management. I'm talking, but that's pretty big. Remember, the ninth biggest bank in the world, this little Spanish bank. Sovereign Bank is today with the assets of independent community. Sovereign Bank today probably has assets of $80 billion. Assets of $80 billion. It's the 16th largest bank in the country. We have 700 branches. We have 8,000 employees. I'm not telling you to buy the stock, but I'm telling you, if you look at our fundamentals, if you look at our price earnings, if you look at our book value, if you look at our return of equity, if you look at any of the margins of Sovereign, we're pretty much selling at a discount to other banks. So you might want to take a look at Sovereign, and that's as much as I'll say about the bank, because I'm not a spokesman for the bank. I'm only the chief economist for the bank, and therefore, that's about it. So we don't have to ask any questions about Sovereign, because I've just answered all of the questions. Talk about questions. Does anybody have a question?
A question was asked about mortgages.
Again, with my feeling on mortgages, because interest rates are moving higher, they have reverse mortgages, they have adjustable mortgages, they have every type of mortgages. But with interest rates moving higher, if you can lock in to a 5.97 or 6.03 30-year mortgage, I think that's the best way to go. If you can do it on a 15-year mortgage, that's even better. But in the yield curve is pretty flat, and pretty soon that yield curve is going to move in the upward tendency. So you could see by the end of next year, you could see mortgage rates running as high as 7%, even more, and that's historically still low. But I am not a mortgage guy. I am simply a guy that says, if I look at interest rates, they're telling me that I want to lock in rates because interest rates are moving higher. And like I said, in January 31, you will see the rate at about 4.5%, no question about it.
The next question has to do with Canada, and Mr. Sherman responds.
I think it's the worst place in the whole world to park some money, but they have a couple of energy companies in Canada. They have a company called Ballard that's into fuel cells that one of these days will break it. But I have enough problems trying to understand the countries in the United States, by the way, and there are tens of thousands of them. So I don't really spend too much time with foreign companies and foreign stocks. But I will tell you one thing. There just was a report out today, and there was more money in foreign funds this year than any year in the last 15 years. So there are many people in this country who believe that you can invest in emerging countries, foreign countries, and make out well, and the numbers are indicating that. So I can't fight the numbers, if you know what I mean. But I don't really know enough about Canada. There's one thing I do know. If it's out of the Vancouver stock market, run. Don't even go near it. If it's out of Toronto, then you could spend a few bucks on it. But I'm very concerned about Toronto markets and regulation on Canada markets, actually. So I don't really get too involved in it.
Mr. Sherman responds to a question on Social Security.
No, I'm a Bushy, by the way. I'm a real right-wing conservative, I want you to know. Okay, but there's a couple of things that George has said recently that really bothers me. I disagree with his policy on immigration. I disagree with his policy and his attitude toward OPEC. I disagree with his attitude and with policy things with Palestine and Israel, by the way, after changing his mind several times. But I still remain a conservative Republican. He'll never get away with it. There's no question about it. Social Security is not a problem. We have enough money in Social Security to take care of everybody in this room until at least 2042. And after 2042, it'll have at least 80% of it, and things will change. There's one thing that I want you to understand in this room right now, why I feel so optimistic about the market. There will be, within the next 10 years, 27% of this population will be baby boomers. 76 million baby boomers. They will have more money than we have. They will be better educated than we are. They will be able to spend more money. They will support a lot of what's going. 76 million Americans, 27% of the population will be baby boomers. And they will keep the markets going. They will keep the secondary markets going. Because they're entirely, from the greatest generation. By the way, there were 14 million Americans in uniform, men and women, during World War II. There are less than 3 million left today. I can say we because I'm one of them. For your information, I work very hard, and I love to work, And when I work, I get rid of the pain that's in my legs. But I'm going to be 82 in January, and I'm very proud of the fact that I'm working at 82 and paying taxes at 82. I don't understand that I pay Social Security, and then I pay taxes on Social Security. Then they give me Social Security, and I pay taxes on the Social Security they give me. I mean, you can't avoid it. It's unbelievable, but I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining because I think I'm at the top end of the Social Security range. The top end, if you're interested, is somewhere about $2,200 or $2,300 a month. That's about the top end of Social Security today.
What about the inheritance tax?
I think we pay enough taxes. We work very hard. I think the exemption of $600,000 and stuff, I think people should go to a finance manager or a lawyer, and they should take care. They should have a living will or a living trust. They should do everything they can to avoid paying taxes. You've got to pay taxes. But there's no reason to overpay taxes, if you know what I mean. And a lot of people overpay taxes. I like the way we run our government in America. Don't misunderstand me. I can't think of any other place that I would rather be than here. But I still say that we are heavily taxed. There's no question about it. And someone asked me what a liberal is. I like liberals. They're honest people. They're respectable people. And they really know that they have a debt to the rest of the world. But they want to pay it with my money, and that's really what I object to. If they wanted to pay it with their own money, that would be something else. But I feel, listen, I was a liberal until I was 40 years old or something like that. So I just say that we need both. We have to run a government. There's no question about it. I've told you that I'm dishappy with the president in certain areas, and I feel there's a lot of things that we have to do. But I'll tell you a story about perception. Perception is that you like a stock because you like the products, you like the management, you like their culture, you like everything about them. I look at the same numbers, I hate them. I don't like management, I think they're thieves, I think they're stealing money, I think their product is defective. But that's your perception and my perception, right? That's why you buy, that's why I sell. My favorite story about perception is about 6 years ago, and we talked about it, I was in Egypt. And after a wonderful trip to Egypt, my fiancé and I went to Israel. We were supposed to meet up with a couple other people in Israel for a tour of Israel. This is my second time in Israel. And we got to the Tel Aviv airport, we were standing around, and finally the two other people who were supposed to be on the trip came up to us. And one of the two other people was a guy that was about 6'6", weighed about 300 pounds, cowboy hat, cowboy boots, silver buckle, silver everything. And besides that, his name was Tex, okay, that figures. And he introduced his wife, Betty. And for the first 5 minutes that we met, he told me how rich he was, how much money he had. And we had a guide, and instead of going on a bus or anything else, he said, why don't we hire a private car? And I started to say no, but you don't argue with a guy who looks like a linebacker for the Chicago Bears. So I said, okay. So we got in this limousine, and for 2 days we traveled through Israel. He had a Catholic guide, really great. But all Tex wanted to talk about was his money, his estate, his capital, his ranch, his home, his holding, and things like that. For 2 solid days, we finally stopped one place up on a road crossing across to Lebanon to get out to just talk. And from here to where that wall was, a double-lane highway, was a guy walking with 3 cows. And Tex says to me, hey, Fred, let's go talk to this guy. I said, hey, wait a minute. I don't speak Hebrew. I speak a little Yiddish. Maybe he doesn't speak. He said, let's go talk to him. So we walked across the road. And we started to talk to this guy. Unfortunately, he spoke English. And we talked about Asia. We talked about all over the world. We talked about Palestine. We talked about politics. We talked about gods. We talked about everything. And then finally, Tex got to what he really wanted to talk about. And he said to the Israeli, is this your estate? And the Israeli looked at him kind of funny. And Tex said, is this your ranch? And he said, for crying out loud, how big is your land? An Israeli pointed about 400 yards one way, about 500 yards another way, back to the road, which was 50 yards away, and back to it. This guy was talking about maybe 4 or 5 acres. And then he looked at the 3 cows and he said, is this your herd? Of course it was. He said, this is my cows and I love them. Texas, you know, back in Texas, I get up early in the morning. I have a great breakfast. And then I get into my truck. And it takes me from early in the morning in my truck to get to the end of my ranch until late that same day to get one end of my ranch to the other end of the ranch, my truck. And the Israeli looked him straight in the eye. You know what he said to him? He said, you know, I used to have a truck like that, but I got rid of it. So when you think about perception, you think about getting rid of it. And that's what the market is all about. God bless you all. God bless the president. God give him the strength. And have a great life, everybody.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a presentation made by the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist of Sovereign Bank, Mr. Fred Sherman, speaking on the economy. This program was recorded at an October luncheon meeting of the Rotary Club of Upper Darby Lansdowne. I'm Gene Moore. Please send your comments on University Forum programs to me by email, jemoore@wrti.org, or call my voicemail, 215-204-4376.